uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, let them eat cake. The official Bush talking point for the day. Actually, this is Barbara Bush's comment, which we'll get to in a second. I just finished doing my local program on KPOJ, a radio station in Portland, Oregon. We do a regular morning progressive show, and then I do this show nationally. And an interesting thing happened that I wanted to share with you. Apparently, yesterday, those of you who were listening yesterday, we were live yesterday on Labor Day for all but the first 2 minutes. And yesterday, there was a story in the New York Times about how Karl Rove was going to be taking responsibility for White House communications. Karl Rove and Dan Bartlett together were going to be getting out the message over the next few days that George Bush is not at fault and that essentially the Democrats should be blamed. Now, that latter part, of course, the New York Times didn't say, but it's pretty obvious. And so I'm doing this local show. Now, this is a show on a 25,000-watt station in Portland, Oregon. You know, it covers a pretty good-sized area. Goes from the center, middle, actually, you can hear it all the way up to Seattle if you got a decent radio, and down into the southern part of the state. You know, it covers a two-state area pretty well. But it doesn't reach northern Virginia, that is, the Washington, D.C. suburbs. And we get a phone call from a guy in northern Virginia. And he doesn't know my name. He's not listening to the show, but he knows that we're a talk show. He's got our phone number, and he calls in and he says, I want to know why the mayor wasn't doing his job. I want to know why the Democratic governor wasn't doing her job. And a light went off in my head. I'll bet you every local talk show in America got that phone call this morning and is continuing to get them, all the midday shows, the afternoon shows, and are continuing to get them. If you listen to local talk radio, I can virtually guarantee you whether it's progressive, whether it's conservative, whether it's a music show that takes calls, this guy or one of the other 100 people operating out of that boiler room, that phone bank in northern Virginia, that probably day before yesterday was calling and selling magazines, today they've got another script. For every show that you can get on, you get paid, you know, 10 bucks and plus or whatever. I mean, you know, they just get their fee. It's like a variation on this. Yesterday, Louise and I were walking through Portland over to a part of Portland, over to a park where there was Labor Day picnic. This was after I got off the air. There was a Labor Day picnic, and we went over there to see some of our friends there. We met the mayor and our Congressman Earl Blumenauer, and the governor was there and all that kind of stuff. So, and not that they're our friends, but I mean, we know all these people. I'm not trying to name drop here, but just the point that, you know, we went over there and we wanted to do our local political due diligence. Okay. And as we're walking over there, there's a house on the main street, on Tacoma Boulevard. There's a house on this main drag that's got a big sign on the second floor of the house. I mean, a big sign that says, no Walmart. And it's right on the corner, so you can see it as you come down the main drag there. And so, standing out in front of this house, where everybody coming down the main street can see it, is this guy holding a sign that says, Selwood, which is the district, that part of Portland, Selwood wants Walmart. So I walk up to him, and I said, how much are they paying you to hold this sign? And the guy says, 15 bucks an hour. And that's more than Walmart pays most of their workers, or many of their workers. I don't know the proportions, but in any case, he's 15 bucks an hour. It's the same thing. You've got a boiler room working out of Washington, D.C. right now. They are aggressively playing politics with this thing. Aggressively playing politics. Hi, this is Mark from Northern Virginia. I just want to know why the mayor didn't do his job. Why isn't the governor taking care of these things? It's incredible. And then Barbara Bush, according to her husband, former President George H.W. Bush, on a tour of hurricane relief centers in Houston, Barbara Bush said today, accompanying her husband, referring to the poor who had lost everything back home and evacuated, this is working very well for them. You know, they were underprivileged anyway. I'm not making this up. She said, almost everyone I've talked to wants to move to Houston. She's talking to the people that she's, of the evacuees, as they're walking around the Astrodome with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. She says, what I'm hearing is they all want to stay in Texas. Everyone is so overwhelmed with the hospitality. And so many of the people in the arena here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway. So this, she chuckles, this is working very well for them. Yeah, it's just, well, fear. You don't believe me?
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
This is working very well for them. Yeah. Let them eat cake. It's just absolutely the perspective of this administration. They don't get it. This is the same thing that happened when Barbara Bush's husband, you'll recall, remember that back in the against the Dukakis campaign? Barbara Bush's husband walks into a supermarket to say hi to the lowly peons who are the worker bees there. And he says, oh, look at this scanner. Isn't this cool? You mean you can just wave something in front of this and it automatically knows what it is and rings it up on the cash register? And everybody around him's jaw is dropping. We've had scanners for 10 years. This guy doesn't know what a scanner is in a store? Well, no, he's never walked into a store and bought anything. The guy was born a multimillionaire. He has people who do that for him. And the same for his son, our current president. Who, by the way, outsourced New Orleans disaster plans to political cronies. FEMA privatized hurricane disaster recovery, or at least the planning for it, for New Orleans and southern Louisiana. And guess who received the contract when FEMA privatized planning for a hurricane disaster? It's a company called Innovative Emergency Management, IEM, Incorporated. They were given a large contract to develop a catastrophic hurricane disaster plan for New Orleans and southeast Louisiana. It doesn't seem to have worked all that well. IEM's president is Madhu Barawal. Ms. Barawal is a big-time contributor to the grand old party, the GOP. She's given this report received this morning from Mark Crispin Miller. She's given thousands of dollars to Republicans, including Louisiana Senator David Vitner, Representative Mike Rogers of Michigan. These are all Republicans. Alabama Senator Richard Shelby, Louisiana Representative Bobby Jindal, Representative Richard Baker of Louisiana, the National Republican Congressional Committee, former Arkansas Senator Tim Hutchinson. Vitner was the largest recipient of funds from Barawal. The chairman of Dewberry, Sidney Dewberry, the vice chairman, Barry K. Dewberry, and the secretary of the firm, Michael Dewberry, have been substantial contributors to George W. Bush. Virginia Senator John Warner, the National Republican Congressional Committee, Senator Shelby, every Republican is critical political action committee. The list goes on and on and on. URS's board of directors includes Richard Bloom, the husband of California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, and James Lee Witt, who was just hired by Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Blanco. So it looks like it's kind of going all over the place here. Incredible. Privatizing some of FEMA's functions. And again, for those of you who didn't hear the clip yesterday, the rest of the story, to paraphrase Paul Harvey, when Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish, now for those of you who've never been to Louisiana or don't know about this, in most states in the country, a local area is called a county. In Louisiana, they're called parishes. In most counties in the United States, you have a county commissioner or a county supervisor. In the parishes of Louisiana, they refer to them as the president. So the president of Jefferson Parish, Aaron Broussard, was interviewed by Tim Russert on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. And he broke down and started sobbing, telling the story of how one of the people working in his office, his mother, called on Monday and said, "Are you coming to get me?" And FEMA had said, "Don't worry, we'll take care of her." And he said, "No, they're coming to get you, Mama." And then on Tuesday, "They're coming to get you, Mama." And on Wednesday, she called. And on Thursday, she called. And on Friday, she called. And each day, the guy said, "They're coming to get you." And finally, Friday night, she drowned. And Aaron Broussard breaks down sobbing. And many of you have seen that clip because bits and pieces of it have been playing on the news all weekend. But what is not being played is what immediately preceded that. Just before Aaron Broussard, the Jefferson Parish president, broke down and started crying, he said something that has raised a lot of alarm bells in the minds of a lot of people around the United States. What the heck is going on here? I'll let you, maybe you can tell me. What is the meaning of this? This is Aaron Broussard on Meet the Press with Tim Russert, Sunday morning, day before yesterday. Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish.
"We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago."
Now, a week ago, that would have been the day after the hurricane hit. FEMA turns back the water trucks. Walmart's trying to donate water to them, and FEMA says, "No, you don't need them."
"FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, 'Come get the fuel right away.' When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, 'Don't give you the fuel.'"
Don't give them the fuel? Oh, wait a minute. You're keeping water from them. You're keeping fuel from them. I mean, if I were creating a... I've written half a dozen novels, eight novels, actually. If I were writing a bad novel about this, and I can tell you, I know how to write bad novels. If I were writing a bad novel about this, I would be... My novel would be saying that, you know, if there was some sinister force here, okay, cut off their water, cut off their power, what's left? You got to keep them from talking to the outside world. You can't let the word get out. You got to lock it down, you got to militarize it, and you got to cut their communications links. Oh, I forgot. After Aaron Broussard said they cut off, they wouldn't let the water through and they wouldn't let the power through, Aaron Broussard then said,
Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in, he reconnects the line, he posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis.
There you go. There, Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish. What is going on? Our phone number 866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the phone center in Northern Virginia of the RNC.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It is 24 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Our program brought to you by Motor Silk, 1-866-LESS-FUEL, 1-866-LESS-FUEL, evergreenamerica.com, their website. Just to break from the all hurricane, all the time news, just an update on what's going on in Iraq. Today, the insurgents have taken a town, their first town. And they're flying Al-Qaeda's black banner from the rooftops. Now, keep in mind, this is a country that didn't have Al-Qaeda in it before George Bush showed up. He's done so much to advance the cause of Osama bin Laden. Osama is still running around loose, still going from place to place, doing whatever he wants. And Bush, of course...
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, it just doesn't spend that much time with him. But Osama is busy and his friends and surrogates. Abu Musab Zarqawi's foreign-led al-Qaeda in Iraq took open control of a key western town, this from the Washington Post, at the Syrian border, deploying its guerrilla fighters in the streets and flying Zarqawi's black banner from the rooftops, tribal leaders and other residents in the city and surrounding villages said. A sign newly posted at the entrance of Qaim, the name of the city, declared, "Welcome to the Islamic Kingdom of Qaim." A statement posted in mosques described Qaim as an Islamic kingdom liberated from the occupation. Meanwhile, New Orleans is becoming occupied. Combat operations have begun, says the army. Wow. 1-866-889-8894. Ed in Denver on the line. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. This is Ed in Denver. I just wanted to call and confirm your theory that the boiler room is getting the word out and the talking points out. I listen to 760 AM out here with Jay Marvin in the mornings. He's a progressive talk show host. And sure enough, some guy called in and said, "Well, you know, you Democrats keep talking about, you know, the failings of FEMA and the government. What about the mayor and the governor? They didn't do anything."
Yeah.
And then the other talking point that they're going to start running up the flagpole is the Democrats are going to start exploiting the tragedy.
Right, for political purposes.
For political purposes.
Now, you know, let's just make this very clear. They're criticizing the mayor because he didn't mobilize the buses. Now, first of all, mobilizing the buses would have been quite a challenge when most of the bus drivers were in their family cars driving out of town. But let's say that they were actually able to mobilize the buses. Those buses could have transported maybe 10,000 people.
Exactly.
What are you going to do with the other 90,000?
Well, so, the governor actually wrote a letter asking for, I think, $5 million to get more buses in there to get the people out, and that was before...
That was on Thursday.
Yeah.
On Thursday, the governor asked George W. Bush for help. She wrote the letter. You can see it in all its glory at BuzzFlash.com or a dozen other websites. It's all over the web. The reality is that the governor did ask for help. The mayor did do everything he could, at least reasonable, you know, within reason. This is not to completely exculpate, however you pronounce that word, exculpate them, or not to completely say, you know, they have no responsibility in this. Certainly, you know, any town...
It pales.
Yeah.
In comparison. I mean, what they're limited. Maybe there's a few things, other things they could have done, but you know, if they don't have the federal government with that structure to get to help them, that just pales.
Exactly. People are saying, well, you know, after 9/11, Rudy Giuliani took control of New York City. Excuse me. After 9/11, they still had telephones working in New York City. The police still had radios that worked. In New Orleans, the police didn't even have radios. The fire department didn't have radios. They couldn't communicate with each other. It was a week before they could communicate. They still can't communicate with each other.
Well, you can see why a couple of the cops killed themselves, because it was their city and their people, and they just... couldn't take it.
Yeah, it was just absolutely overwhelming. Ed, thanks. Oh, Ed, that caller to your Denver station, your local Denver station, do you know if it was an out-of-state call?
I don't.
The caller didn't identify himself as being from out-of-state?
No.
Because that's what I got. Here I am doing a local show, and I get a call from North Virginia.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, Northern Virginia. I mean, isn't that the Washington, D.C. suburbs? I mean,
I know
our signal doesn't reach that far. Ed, I'm sorry, I gotta go.
Well, thanks. Keep on going, Tom.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Harbin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 33 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Our phone number, 1-866-889-8894. Michael Toth, who puts together our audio archives. And you can get to them, by the way, by going to the TomHartman.com and just clicking on the audio archives link and then going to the audio archive. Actually, if you go to our message board, there's a direct link to them. So go to the message board blog, and then it says audio archives. Click on that, and it gets you right to them. And they're open and free, and they're sorted by topics. Anyhow, Mike does all that work, and good on him for it. It's a great thing. And he sent me a note here that I thought was just really touches on two issues that are so important that somebody needs to be saying out loud. He said, number one, is the federal government going to give compensation to the victims of Katerina as they did to the victims of 9/11? He says, yeah, right. The difference? White collar versus minorities and impoverished. He said, it probably matters not, because if you recall, the payoffs to the victims of 9/11 were based on their income. And this is similar to the tort reform. You know, they in states all around the United States, I think it's 14 states now, they've passed tort reform. And, of course, they're trying to do it at a federal level that says that you can only sue if you're injured or if you're killed or if your child is killed by a product or by an incompetent doctor or by a badly designed automobile. You can only sue for up to $250,000. That's all a human life is worth. Or earnings. In other words, if somebody earns more than $250,000, they can sue for that. But if they earn less than $250,000 a year, they can only sue for a maximum of $250,000. So if your spouse is injured, or if you're injured, and your life is wiped out, you can sue for a maximum of $250,000, unless you happen to be Phil Knight, who's worth billions, and he could sue for billions. Or unless you remember the Walton family, who made, you know, they made $8 billion last year. You can sue to recover lost earnings. So what this is an absolute cap on what the middle class and the poor can recover in a lawsuit. And notice is served on hospitals and providers of products and services that don't mess with the rich people, because they can still sue you and get millions from you. Well, anyhow, that's the way that compensation was determined for 9/11. Will the Katerina? Probably not. He also adds, I spoke with a few people in the black community about their feelings. They're furious but not surprised. He says, I've decided to donate through their churches because of what I keep hearing about the Red Cross and the United Way. I agree. I think that probably one of the best ways, and I'm going to be, in fact, Heidi Tauber, who does the morning show with me, and I were just talking about this during the break, and she's going to be looking into this. One of the best ways, in my opinion, to get money into any situation is to go through an organization that actually had people on the ground before the disaster. And that would be, you know, local churches, local synagogues, local mosques. They're already set up as nonprofit organizations. They can receive donations. They have members. They have an infrastructure. So I would start there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Mike in Coburg, Oregon on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind, Mike?
I love that response. On the local show, you did a comparison between, I think it was Charlie that did Florida for Jeb Bush
Yeah, I did that. I did that yesterday on this program. I'll probably get to repeating it, although I try not to repeat my content,
sure.
But that's pretty gruesome.
Where can I get hard copy of that?
Whitehouse.gov. I'm not kidding you. This is all off the web, the White House's website. In fact, it's possible that I may even hang on just a second here. Let me just see. I submitted no, that's not working. Hang on just a second. Rats, my computer just went nuts. I submitted an article to Common Dreams this morning that has that information in it.
Okay.
And I just wanted to see if Common Dreams had published it yet, because if they had, I was going to say you could just go find it. Okay, they haven't published it yet. So if they publish my article today, you can just find it at commondreams.org. Otherwise, go to whitehouse.gov and just type in Hurricane Francis and search on it.
Okay, Francis. And then is there a timeline for the...
I'm sorry, Hurricane Charlie.
Okay. Is there a timeline on Katrina yet?
On the White House website?
Well, wherever. Is there a published timeline on the responses? Who did what when?
To the best of my knowledge, there's not.
Okay.
But just, you know,
helpful.
Yeah. And that'll come, no doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely no doubt. That'll come.
That was just an appalling thing. Jeez.
Yeah. Mike, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Just for those of you who might not have heard it, yesterday was a holiday, and so, you know, I'll repeat it. This from the August 17th, St. Petersburg's Times. Now, here's the story. See, on August 12th or 13th, I think it was, of last year, now, it was a year and 2 weeks ago, a similar hurricane to Katrina, which was Category 3 by the time it hit, And in New Orleans, actually, it was only Category 2 because it, you know, it went off at an angle, so only part of it hit New Orleans. But a similar hurricane, a Category 3 hurricane that was Category 4 over the ocean, hit Florida. The governor of that state is the brother of the president. It's a red state. It was coming after a largely white area, and it was 3 months before a national election. And as I recall, that was August 13th or August 14th. This from August 17th, St. Petersburg Times. Okay, this would be the newspaper, what would that be, Monday or Tuesday? Don't have a calendar in front of me. Governor Jeb Bush sought federal help Friday while Hurricane Charley was still in the Gulf of Mexico. President Bush approved the aid about an hour after the hurricane made landfall. You'll recall, by the way, Governor Blanco of Louisiana requested help from George W. Bush on Thursday. Anyhow, back to the story, St. Petersburg Times. By Monday afternoon, the cavalry seemed to be in place. Cargo planes were shuttling FEMA supplies from a Georgia Air Force base to a staging area in Lakeland, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had shipped 11 truckloads of water and 14 truckloads of ice. The first assistance checks to victims were to be shipped Monday night. And in fact, in response to Hurricane, that was Hurricane Charley. In response to Hurricane Francis, another one roughly just a few weeks earlier. As of noon Monday, 2 days after Francis made landfall, FEMA and other federal response agencies have taken the following actions. Now keep in mind, this is 2 days after the hurricane. This would be the equivalent of Monday with Katerina. This is after Hurricane Francis. About 100 trucks of water and 280 trucks of ice are present or will arrive in the Jacksonville staging area today. 900,000 meals ready to eat are on site in Jacksonville, ready to be distributed. Over 7,000 cases of food, e.g. vegetables, fruits, cheese, ham, and turkey, are scheduled to arrive in Winter Haven today. Disaster medical assistance teams, DMATs, are on the ground and setting up comfort stations. FEMA community relations personnel will coordinate with DMATs to assist victims. Urban search and rescue teams are now completing reconnaissance missions in coordination with state officials. This is Monday. Hurricane hit over Saturday and Sunday. Thousands of homes gone. FEMA is coordinating with the Department of Energy and the state to assure that necessary fuel supplies can be distributed throughout the state with a special focus on hospitals and other emergency facilities that are running on generators. The Army Corps of Engineers will soon begin its efforts to provide tarps to tens of thousands of owners of homes and buildings that have seen damage to their roofs. The Department of Health and Human Services, Veterans Affairs, and Defense together have organized 300 medical personnel to be on standby. Medical personnel will be deployed to Florida tomorrow. This is from Hurricane Francis. Just before the hurricane, FEMA's national and regional operations centers are operating around the clock, coordinating the prepositioning of assets and responding to state requests for assistance. Deployed an advanced emergency response team to the Florida State Emergency Operations Center in Tallahassee to facilitate state requests for assistance. In addition, 3 rapid needs assessment teams have been pre-deployed to Florida. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, now this is all before the hurricane. This is from the White House website. The advanced preparations include the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers at FEMA's request is coordinating the staging of 100 truckloads of water and 100 truckloads of ice at operational centers in Florida. The first shipment of 30,000 tarps is en route to Atlanta, Georgia, to be pre-staged for delivery to areas affected by Francis once the storm is cleared. FEMA is working to provide 10 trailers of generators at the request of Florida that will be used to provide power to critical facilities affected by the hurricane. 4 urban search and rescue teams are deployed to Florida, 2 in Miami and 2 in Jacksonville. 4 teams are on alert. Amazing. Alan in Trumansburg, New York. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I've been listening to your coverage, and it seems to me that there's many cases of criminal negligence could be brought. But when I listened to the clip from Aaron Broussard, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Broussard, yeah.
That sounds much worse than criminal negligence. It seems like an act of war against the people of New Orleans. If you wanted to start a war against New Orleans, you could go down and put up a blockade, don't allow the water and the diesel fuel in,
and then cut their communications.
Yeah, send in the Navy SEALs and cut the freaking phone line.
Yeah, here it is one more time. This is Aaron Broussard speaking with Tim Russert on national television on Meet the Press. Day before yesterday, he's the president of Jefferson Parish, the equivalent of the county commissioner, Aaron Broussard. And
We had Walmart deliver 3 trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in. He reconnects the line. He posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines.
Now, what? Why?
You know, it seems like if we were at war, it might be legal to stop the diesel fuel and maybe cut the phone lines. But would it be legal to stop the water?
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Spike, what's on your mind?
Hey, gonzo greetings from my boiler room here.
There you go. Okay.
Real quick, before I get to my point, I just want to say one thing. When I heard about that caller from Virginia, I wouldn't be surprised, considering the dimwits they're working for, if they thought they were on this show and they actually only ended up on your local show.
It may have been. Although my guess is that they're sitting down there with a list of 600, 700, 800, 900, I don't know how many there are, local talk shows all across the United States. And they're simply dialing for dollars. They're calling every local talk show to say, hey, you know, here's the talking point for the day. You know, hey, what about the mayor? What about the governor? Let's not blame George for this.
Yeah, I'm sure when I listen to more national, liberal, progressive shows later, I'm sure I'll hear them again.
And on the right, I mean, this is what Sean Hannity was doing yesterday. After I got off the air, I was popped in on the radio as I was driving home, I regret to say. And he was doing it. It's actually fairly brilliant the way they do it, because they immunize themselves. They say, this is no time to play politics with this. This is no time to be attacking people about this, which is a way of saying anybody who attacks us is playing politics. However, it is important, I think, to ask the question, why wasn't the mayor and why weren't the governor ready for this? And so he does the attack, but makes it sound like it's just a question, and he pre-immunizes by saying, don't attack.
Well, and that kind of gives me a perfect segue, too, to the actual point of my call, which is, could we, somebody out there give us a county or precinct, countywide numbers from the presidential election? What counties went to Kerry? What counties went to Bush?
Well,
I can almost guarantee New Orleans went Kerry.
I can tell you right now, it did. If New Orleans were wiped off the map, Louisiana would become a red state.
Because, I mean, Mississippi, I'm sure, had a lot more counties that went for Bush than Louisiana.
Mississippi is a very conservative state, and New Orleans is a very progressive city.
And
New Orleans, without New Orleans, Mississippi becomes a red state, particularly if you relocate those people to red states that are large enough to absorb them, or blue states that are safely blue and you can't do anything about it. But do not, under any circumstances, relocate them to purple states, to swing states. And as far as I can tell, no swing states are getting these folks. But, you know, again, that sounds like historical conspiracy theory stuff, so I'm just going to leave it at that and let people draw their own conclusions. Spike, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. Mohammed in Boston. Hey, Mohammed, what's up?
I'm doing just fine. I appreciate your show.
Thank you.
And I enjoy it very much. And actually, you made my point just before I get on the phone.
Okay.
If you read my mind, because I was getting ready to say that what happened is, I think it was by design. They're trying to remove any liberal, any Democratic out of the South, and that was the best way to do it. And New Orleans is supposed to be a very liberal, progressive city, as you said.
Yeah, probably one of the most liberal cities in America. I have a hard time believing that guys in the White House, even as sick as Karl Rove is, I have a hard time believing that he would just sit around and say, okay, how can we exploit this disaster for, you know, political purposes? On the other hand, I turn on right-wing talk radio, and what are they doing? They're exploiting it for political purposes. I do my own progressive talk show in a local market in Portland, Oregon, and I'm getting a call from a Republican boiler room in Northern Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. suburbs, making the Republican talking points. And yesterday, the New York Times points out that Karl Rove is now in charge of making sure that the president's message gets out. And we know what Karl Rove does. He smears people. And so the big smear is on, I guarantee you. Mohammed, thanks for the call. Good to hear
Thank
from you.
Have a nice day. Thank you.
You too. I appreciate it. Mark is on the line in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Nothing much. Just love your show and listen to you on Sirius Satellite Radio in upstate South Carolina.
Good on you. Good on you.
And, you know, I absolutely do not doubt that you're telling the truth about the boiler room, because it seems like everything you say is the truth. And
I could play the clip of the call. It would take a while to pull it out of the show, but you know, it really happened. I can't say for sure that it's a boiler room. I don't know that, but I do know that some guy who wasn't listening to the show and who was out of state where he couldn't listen to the show calls in with the Republican talking points. I mean, put two and two together.
Oh yeah, I know about the Karl Rove smear machine also, because not only did they call on telephone banks and smear all kind of lies about John McCain and his wife during the primary here.
Yeah.
But they also pulled up all of his signs, all of John McCain's signs, all up and down the road, just threw them everywhere.
Yeah, that's Karl Rove at work. Thanks a lot.
Good to hear.
Good, thanks a lot, Mark. Good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. Oh, my goodness. What are we going to do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to get active. Turn your outrage, turn your anger, turn your upset, turn your confusion, whatever you're expecting, turn it into political action. Go to democracyforamerica.com, for example, and join up. Sign up for a meetup. Participate. Go to reclaimdemocracy.org. Go to the Democratic Party, democrats.org, or democrats.com, for that matter, and participate 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrow's where it ends. What we do today don't stay the course. On a horse that's going the wrong way.
Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Phil in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind today?
Good morning. What's on my mind today is all of the many, many times that this state, which is a poor state, very small population, really doesn't have the clout to get national attention. But our legislators, even Billy Tozan, Mary Landrieu, people who have gone, I think Richard Baker as well, have tried to introduce and pass legislation to rebuild our coast and to prop up the levee system. We've known about this for years and years. We've had people calling into our local radio shows and saying, what's being done?
Yeah, and the reason why for the rest of America, and this has to be said, the reason why this is important is because most of the wealth of this country that comes out of the Midwest, all of our agricultural products, and a lot of the raw materials for the factories of the Midwest go through the Mississippi River. And without New Orleans there to provide a labor pool for the folks working on the river and to provide the port, you know, the whole port areas, you got commerce grinding to a halt. I mean, it's not like people just said, hey, this would be a cool place to live. They're there for a reason, most of them, or at least the original ones.
And also the seafood industry as well. I mean, those waters, I mean, that bad news is yet to be looked at as far as what is done to our fisheries.
Yeah.
I do believe that there's 75% of the seafood that this country eats comes out of the Gulf waters around Louisiana and Mississippi.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if it was 75% of at least the eastern half of the United States' seafood. I know that there's a lot that comes out of fisheries here on the West Coast as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And, Phil, you wanted to say something about gas shortages?
We have been under extreme gas shortages here. There are people that have been pulling up to the gas pumps in this city of Baton Rouge, where I live, with trailers with 55-gallon drums strapped to them and filling them up. We've run out of gas every day since Thursday evening.
Wow.
So, but they've been out refilling them, but we're looking at what happens when we really do run out of gas.
Yeah,
it's the precursor of what's going to be happening.
Yeah. Well said. Phil, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. And U.S. Marine jets bombed two bridges in Iraq. The war is intensifying in Iraq. Now that the Iraqi insurgents have taken a city, we're trying to take it back. We just lost three Marines. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone.
You've have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, on CRN Digital, WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org. At a press conference yesterday afternoon, President George Bush... This would be former President George H.W. Bush, actually, singled out the Walton family for their generosity to Katrina. Somebody called, by the way, and pointed out I've been calling it Katarina. That's what happens when you live in Germany for a year. Sorry. Katrina were relief efforts. George Herbert Walker Bush. I don't think anybody would mind if I singled out the chairman and CEO of Walmart, Lee Scott, who is right here. He told us that they gave the Bush-Clinton fund a total of $23 million, $15 million from the company, and then $8 million more from the Walton family, the marvelous philanthropists that they are. End of quote. Okay, so the Walton family gave $8 million. Let's put that in perspective. The Walton family, I believe this is from Op-Ed News, the Walton family's net worth is $90 billion. They earned last year $8 billion. So $8 million represents 0.009% of their total wealth. The average family's net worth is in America is $86,100. If the average family in America contributed at the same rate as the Waltons, if you had given money to the hurricane relief at the same rate as the Waltons, you would have donated $7.74. But I doubt that the president would be thanking you. Scott in Ohio on the line. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind? Scott in Ohio? No, Scott. Okay. Heidi in New York City. Hey, Heidi, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm responding to what you were saying before about how you had a tough time thinking that Karl Rove was thinking, how can we... exploit this for political purposes.
Well, I think before the fact. I mean, after the fact, there's no doubt in my mind that Rove would try and figure out how to make it, work for political purposes. But the whole idea that before the disaster, Rove was sitting around saying, okay, we're going to relocate these people to red states and we're going to avoid swing states because we don't want them to become voters, that kind of stuff. I think these guys are incompetent.
Well, what I was thinking about reminded me of the project for the New American Century.
I do.
And how they wanted to go to war with Iraq, and that, as soon as 9/11 happened, that was their excuse to go there. And so I don't think anything is beyond this administration. I mean, look at how they rolled back all of our civil liberties with the Patriot Act and countless acts that they've passed while everyone's paying attention to all of these things going on.
Oh, absolutely, Heidi. There is no doubt in my mind that not only would they use Hurricane Katrina for political gain, but that they will, and that they are, and that they will be, and that they are just absolutely aggressively trying to figure out how to do that every single day, and that the odds are they actually will figure out a way to turn this thing around and blame the Democrats and blame the mayor and just make it all, this wasn't George's fault. He couldn't have imagined. Of course, he did provide all that extraordinary help when the hurricanes hit Florida, pre-positioning, 7,000 cases of food, including fruits, cheese, ham, and turkey? But that was Florida, you understand. Thurman in Omaha, Nebraska. Hey, Thurman, what's on your mind today? What's up?
Hey, I just heard about Halliburton getting the reconstruction contract.
Yeah, for the naval yard down there, yep.
Yeah, and I think it's much more basic than that. I think it's basically disaster capitalism. I mean, you're seeing the same thing you saw in Iraq with them cutting the phone lines, communication, so that Halliburton could rebuild them.
Well, I'm not sure that it was so that Halliburton could rebuild them. I think it was they were trying to seize control, and that's the thing that concerns me. I frankly, as I said before, I don't know why they would do that, and I believe that most Americans really want that answered. and I do too. I mean, you know, why would FEMA go down and cut the communications lines into New Orleans? Why would they, the emergency phone lines for Jefferson Parish? Why would they turn back a water truck? Why would they refuse to allow the Coast Guard to give them diesel fuel for their generators? I mean,
so they could charge for it.
Well, I don't think so. You know, I think down the road they always figure out a way to make money out of this, and they're certainly not going to do what Roosevelt and Truman did. Roosevelt actually created a war profiteering commission to look into anybody making money off World War II, and if anybody could
right.
be shown to be making a profit off World War II, their sorry butts got thrown in jail. And Harry
yeah.
Truman followed through on that. You're not. On the other hand, in this case here, it's anybody profits on this war, and George W. will give him a Congressional Medal of Honor or promotion or whatever. I mean, it's just and a lot.
I think you'll see the same thing here. But the only bright spot I think is that we can tell the Iraqis that yeah, we ruined your country and everything, and but you know it's the same thing they're doing to us.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all victims of George W. Bush and his administration, his merry band. Thank you, Thurman.
Yeah.
I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Oh, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. Founded in 1990, Bioneers is a nonprofit organization that promotes practical environmental solutions and innovative social strategies for restoring the earth and communities. Their website is bioneers.org. I'll be speaking at their conference this fall. Andy Kimbrell is a Bioneer. And he is a public interest attorney and author. He's written several books, including The Human Body Shop, and co-edited the recent definitive critique of industrial agriculture, Fatal Harvest. Hey, Andy.
Good to be with you, Tom. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Thank you. And you're affiliated with the Center for Food Safety?
Yeah, I'm the executive director of the Center for Food Safety, both as offices in Washington, D.C. and in San Francisco, where I am right now. And, we take on Monsanto and all these big agribusiness companies and fight them on genetically engineered foods and on their general persecution of American farmers across the country. And these, I just actually saw an email this morning where Monsanto picked up another couple of major seed companies. And people may not be aware of it, but they're actually patenting, most of the seeds of the earth at this time. So they'll actually have corporate ownership of the seeds that we all depend on for our food. So
these are not genetically modified seeds.
These are the old-fashioned seeds. This is just the old-fashioned seeds. Yeah, they basically, buy up the patents on the traditional seed brands.
So if you save the seeds from the tomatoes you grew last year and replant them, Monsanto might come and arrest you?
They could, absolutely. Depending on if they have the patent on it, yeah. One of the things that happened during, we're talking about the former President Bush and his predecessor Reagan, there's a lot of subtle things that happened outside of the kind of massive corruption we're talking about with Halliburton and the unbelievably unseemly profiteering on war and disaster. More subtle things, more subtle corporate enclosure, if you will, that people aren't aware of, and that was in 1985, the Reagan administration's patent office allowed for the first time corporations to patent seeds, to patent life.
To patent living organisms.
A living organism.
Right across the board.
They started with microbes in 1980, but in 1985 they stretched that to seeds, and in 1987 the Reagan patent office said corporations can come in and patent human genes, human cells, even human organs.
Right. This is, in fact, isn't there a relatively infamous story of somebody who had his own blood, his own body, no longer belongs to him?
Yeah, that was the John Moore case. Here's a guy who had cancer of the spleen, Tom, okay? A bunch of doctors treated him without telling him. They made a cell tissue culture of his cancerous spleen. Turned out that it produced some really interesting chemicals. They sold this for billions of dollars. They patented his spleen tissue and sold that patent for billions of dollars without telling him. And he sued and said, hey, wait a minute, that's my spleen you patented and made billions of dollars. I think they sold it to Sandoz Pharmaceuticals. And he actually lost. He won on the lower courts. The California Supreme Court said, no, they have the right to patent that and you don't have the right to it. So they sort of reaffirmed this idea that corporations come in and patent everything. But they, for certainly those of us who were concerned with food issues and food security issues, the ability of these corporations to patent these seeds is not only something that's scary because they can then utilize what seeds they want. They can actually, reverse trends now we have towards diversity and create more monoculture. But they can also sue, and they have sued farmers across the country for violating their patents by seed saving, the exact scenario you talked about. And we at the Center for Food Safety, and people can catch this at on our website, Center for Food Safety, one word, .org. We just published a definitive report on over 140 47 farmers that Monsanto has sued in this country and some small businesses as well for violating their patents by either saving seeds or by even unintentionally having genetically engineered seeds or other patented seeds on their property. And so Monsanto's hired Pinkertons and gone around the country and actually investigating farmers to see if they can find their patented seed varieties, you know, with seed dealers or on these farms. It's quite remarkable. It's really turning almost a lot of American farmers, particularly in areas where, you know, where they're growing a lot of corn and some of these genetically engineered varieties, really, almost serfs, who are serving the corporations because they patented the seeds.
Almost.
Yeah, well,
I mean, how is this different than surf?
It really isn't. We're hoping now that we have a number of suits that we've been involved with farmers who are fighting back and saying, hey, when we find your patented varieties and genetically engineered varieties in our corn or in our soy or our canola or our cotton, we're going to sue you for trespass. And we're going to make sure the liability goes back to the corporations. So there is some fight back going on. But
good luck on that.
Yeah, well, you know, Monsanto comes in and sues these farmers, and they often do not have any real legal representation. They certainly don't have the money to fight a big giant like Monsanto. So on our website, you can find a way to help these farmers.
At centerforfoodsafety.org.
Yeah.
F-O-R is the four, centerforfoodsafety.org. We're talking with Andrew Kimbrell. You're the executive director for the Center for Food Safety, a public interest attorney and the author. Am I pronouncing your last name right?
You sure are.
Okay, great. Andrew, you talk about the seven deadly myths of industrial agriculture, that it's going to feed the world, that their industrial food is health, safety, and nutritious, safe and nutritious, the healthy industrial food is cheap, that industrial agriculture is efficient, that industrial food offers more choices, that industrial agriculture benefits the environment and wildlife, and that biotech is going to solve all of our problems. First of all, I know that you can knock all that stuff down, you know, quite quickly, and I suspect probably most of our listeners are already on that page with you. I'm curious, though, what the trend is that you're seeing with regard to the puncturing of this mythology. I mean, I'm seeing organic food appearing in you know, supermarkets all over the place. I'm seeing people waking up. And also, I'm curious if you think that the disruptions in Louisiana right now, which is where a lot of the industrial food manufactured, grown in the United States, is being exported out of through the port of New Orleans, the corn in particular that we're selling to South America. Is that going to have any effect on this?
Yeah, I think it will. First of all, we all know the real name of Katrina is global warming.
Sure.
Global warming is going to have an immeasurable effect. We just sued through my law firm and through another organization I run. We just sued the Bush administration a couple years ago saying that they should be regulating greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. And we just lost a couple of weeks ago a 2-1 decision at the appellate court, where the
judges appointed by Reagan or Bush,
yeah,
I guess.
The two Reagan appointees said, ruled against us, and the one Clinton appointee ruled for us. But interestingly enough, the opinions were mixed. But one of the opinions of the case said that EPA should be regulating global warming, but since it doesn't exist, according to this judge. Since it doesn't exist, they don't have to. They only have to start doing it when we know it really exists.
So, bottom line, we're out of time here, Andrew. But your suggestion is that global warming is going to be the thing that shifts this.
Yeah,
thing.
But I would also just quickly say to you folks that organic is the fastest growing sector in American agriculture, and we are seeing tremendous trends with people taking control of their food supply and taking that control away from the corporations and working with CSAs and small farms around the country. It's very encouraging.
Andrew Kimbrell, our pioneer for the day, centerforfoodsafety.org. The website. Thanks for being with us, Andrew.
Good to be with you, Tom.
I appreciate it. Keep up the great work. It's 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I wouldn't screw up the environment or the money for retirement like the liberals complain.
Oh, you tell them, George.
I'd impress all my poo-pooers, shocking all the evildoers if I only had a brain.
That's a lot to hope for.
Now, I pronunciate much better. Honor liberties to the letter for the folks that we detain. And when the world called me a fatty, I wouldn't run off to my daddy if I only had a brain.
If only.
Picture me on live TV. Reporters buzz like bees, asking me about them WMDs. I hold my ground, or they'll soon be found. Still, I'd admit that it's a tight race. I'm between Iraq and a hard place in this tough campaign. And with the mission unaccomplished, you have no idea how I've wished that I only had a brain.
Welcome back. By Bill Jacobs. BillJacobs.us, his website. Thanks a lot. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Welcome back to the program. In just a moment, I want to share ein bisschen Deutsch mit Ihnen. In one moment. First, Bruce in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Bruce. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tom. Doing great. Weather's wonderful here. I was, listening to the show this morning, and I listened yesterday. You were the only person live yesterday, I think.
Probably. I started in radio doing weekends. It's like, in my mind, that's the time that, live radio is really useful. I mean, particularly, plus there were big news events, but I've worked every Thanksgiving for the last couple of years and, Christmas, and I mean, I'm on the air.
Well,
what can I say?
I for one, appreciate it. And I appreciate, you being there to tell us some truth yesterday.
Thank you.
In the middle of all the lies that were being spun.
Yeah, and thanks to Dave Poole for showing up and engineering our program yesterday, too.
Absolutely. All the fine people that support you there. What I really wanted to talk about, though, was the ineptness of the government. And we're seeing the where FEMA has turned away various things and has said no. And I can't help but wonder if the ultimate aim here is to make the government seem completely ineffectual so that they can accomplish, Norquist's dream of drowning it in the bathtub.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the agenda. That's what they're all about, is basically privatizing all of America, privatizing government. This goes back to Reagan. I mean, these guys just don't believe in government. And the bottom line is you can't govern if you don't believe in government. It's really that's as a correspondent. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name at the moment, from California. He sent me an email saying, you can't govern if you don't believe in government. I thought, what a brilliant phrase. I dropped into the piece I sent to Common Dreams today. It's just that's the bottom line.
Well, that is, and the other thing too is that we as citizens we've got to document all of this because the misinformation machine is running wide open right now.
Oh, they are going to change this so fast. I mean, here you had John Kerry, who had a distinguished war record and three Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star and a Silver Star. Here you had a guy who was a genuine war hero, and they turned him into a war scum. Here you had 9/11, which was the biggest intelligence failure in the history of the United States, and they turned it into some sort of a victory. They had 56 warnings before this thing happened, and they did nothing. They didn't protect us. They did nothing. And then they lied about how the air was in New York as the people were going in to help out, and they had Christy Todd Whitman, she's still indignant and upset about it. She says that they forced her to lie about it. And then the compensation, we'll compensate you for your loss in 9/11 if you promise not to sue the government or be politically active. What? And yet they've turned all of that into the noble endeavor. And so, I mean, they have half of America thinking that Iraq was somehow behind the planes that flew into the trade towers. And obviously, of course, we all know Iraq had nothing to do with it whatsoever. I mean, even in a moment of a rare moment of candor, George Bush even said so.
We've got no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No evidence. Nope. But that's not what they would have you think, broadly speaking. So anyhow, Bruce, thanks a lot for the call. I got to boogie out of here.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Okay, good talking to you. I appreciate the call. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Yes, you are in the middle of the vast radical metal conspiracy. Take no imitations, my friends. We really do represent the opinions and the mindset of the vast majority of Americans.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I love my country so much, man. Like an exasperating friend. Dum, 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 dum.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics. 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS. You get the latest iPods now, as well as all things computer of any kind, whatever you may need. Good folks. Good folks at Small Dog Electronics. Andy Borowitz weighs in on the issue. 4.5 years after he was first sworn in as president, experts in the field of disaster assessment today called the presidency of George W. Bush the worst disaster in the history of the United States of America. The sober assessment came from the University of Minnesota's Enormous Disaster Institute, which studies and attempts to quantify colossal disasters, both natural and man-made. Dr. Lorraine Kresser, who heads the institute, said that the University of Minnesota experts decided to place the current administration at the top of the nation's list of huge disasters after assessing the damage the White House has caused over the past 4.5 years, both at home and abroad. Dr. Kresser said, after taking a good look at the wreckage the Bush presidency has created, we would estimate the cost of the damage at somewhere to the mid to high zillions. Hours after the University of Minnesota released its findings, House Speaker Dennis Hastert said that given the high price tag, rebuilding the Bush presidency, quote, doesn't make sense to me, end quote. Speaking to reporters on Capitol Hill, Congressman Hastert said that based on what he had seen of the Bush presidency lately, quote, it looks like a lot of it could be bulldozed, end quote. But hours later, the speaker backtracked somewhat, telling reporters, like most Republicans in Congress, I have been drinking very heavily for the past several days. Elsewhere, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said today that his department would intensify the search for those missing since Hurricane Katrina hit, including Vice President Dick Cheney. Actually, Dick Cheney just came back from his vacation in Wyoming today, I believe. Or maybe it'll be tomorrow. The Associated Press, I mean, the machine is running full tilt boogie. The Associated Press, an article by Will Lester, headline, White House, leave blame game for later. Criticized for its sluggish response to Hurricane Katrina, the White House said today that, quote, we're not going to engage in the blame game, end quote. No, instead, they're going to have their phone banks call radio talk shows. But instead, that wasn't from the AP story, that was me. But instead, would keep the focus on rescue and recovery efforts across the heavily battered Gulf Coast. Scotty McClellan, the spokesman for President Bush, the guy who once said, you know, there are folks that you can fool some of the folks, some of the people all of the time, concentrate on them. Scotty McClellan, he says, there are ongoing problems that need to be addressed. We've got to keep our energies focused on the task at hand. He said that there would be time later for a thorough analysis of the government's response. And in fact, George W. Bush yesterday said to Michael Brown, the head of FEMA, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. If this is a heck of a job, well, you can fill in the blank. McClellan said Bush was not satisfied with the response and there were problems that need to be addressed, but he would not talk about Brown or say whether any officials had offered their resignation because of the widespread criticism. McClellan said, this is all looking at the blame game. We're not going to engage in the blame game. Right. The Pentagon, however, is willing to engage in the blame game. This from Democracy Now. Criticism of the federal government's response is also coming from some unlikely sources, including the Pentagon. Lieutenant Commander Sean Kelly, a Pentagon spokesman for Northern Command, revealed on the BBC. Isn't this interesting? He's not revealing this to American media. Maybe they're just not asking the question. Revealed on the BBC that NORTHCOM was prepared to send in search and rescue his helicopters from the USS Bataan almost immediately after the hurricane hit. He said, we had things ready. The only caveat is we have to wait until the president authorizes us to do so, end quote. That authorization did not happen for days, even though the ship was docked just outside New Orleans. On board, the ship had doctors, hospital beds, food, and the ability to make up to 100,000 gallons of pure water every day. and in Germany. Christine Andelhart. Zum letzten Stand jetzt live aus Biloxi, Christine Andelhart. Vor zwei Minuten ist er gerade der Präsident. Es tut mir leid für mein Schlechtdeutsch. In seinem Konvoi vorbeigefahren, was sich hier in Biloxi, aber während des Tages, August, well, in English. Okay. Why is it that we have to hear this from the German television? Well, maybe this is why. Here's the English translation of what German television was reporting yesterday, or the day before yesterday, actually, when George Bush went down and had his little moment in the sun there, his little Potemkin village. Quote, this is the English translation of the German television report, live report on German television. 2 minutes ago, the president drove past in his convoy. But what has happened here in Biloxi all day long is truly unbelievable. Suddenly, recovery units appeared. Suddenly, bulldozers were there. Those hadn't been here all the days before, and this in an area in which it wouldn't really be necessary to do a big cleanup, because far and wide nobody lives here. People are more inland in the city. The president travels with a big press crew. This press crew got very beautiful pictures, which are supposed to say that the president's here and help is on the way. The extent of the natural disaster shocked me, but the extent of the staging of this photo opportunity is shocking me at least the same way. With that, back to Hamburg. Damit zurück nach Hamburg. Yeah. What is... it's just... Michael Carmichael sent this out. He says, this is all the fingerprints of Karl Rove, doesn't it? German TV crews took longer to dismantle their gear after the president's photo op yesterday, Friday. This was a report on Saturday, last Friday, and were thus able to capture the fact that all the bulldozers and recovery view crews visible in the background during Bush's appearance packed up and left shortly after he did. Packed up and left. And the Walmart CEO being thanked for his minimal contribution. Walmart, the Walton family donating $8 million for hurricane relief. That's the equivalent for the average American family of $7.74. Hurricane Center Director. Now, this is a fascinating one. Max Mayfield. He's the director of the National Hurricane Center. It's an article in Editor and Publisher, which is the publication for publications. Max Mayfield, director of the National Hurricane Center, told the Times-Picayune Sunday afternoon that officials with FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security, including FEMA Director Mike Brown and Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, listened in on electronic briefings given by his staff in advance of Hurricane Katrina slamming Louisiana and Mississippi, and were advised of the storm's deadly. They knew in advance. Everything that has happened, they knew in advance that it was a possible to probable scenario. The newspaper, the Times-Picayune, a conservative newspaper, by the way, it's owned by the same group that owns the Oregonian here in Portland. It's, you know, basically a conservative corporation. The Times-Picayune reported, and I quote, Mayfield said the strength of the storm and the potential disaster it could bring were made clear, both during the briefings and informal advisories, which warned of a storm surge capable of overtopping levees in New Orleans and winds strong enough to blow out windows of high-rise buildings. He said the briefings included information on expected wind speed, storm surge, rainfall, and the potential for tornadoes to accompany the storm as it came ashore. Mayfield, this, keep in mind, to the FEMA Director Michael Brown and Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff before the hurricane hit New Orleans. Now, keep in mind, also, before the hurricane hit New Orleans, Kathy Blanco, Kathleen Blanco, the governor of New Louisiana, had written a formal letter requesting help to George W. Bush. Mayfield said, this is the director of the National Hurricane Center, "We were briefing them way before landfall. It's not like this was a surprise. We had in the advisories that the levee could be topped." Amazing. He added, all those briefings are logged in the Hurricane Center's records. So they can't, you know, like, pretend that it didn't happen. Bush is going to be planning more photo ops. He's going to be going down there again this week. My suggestion to him would be, don't show up. During his last photo op, this via America blog, there were a lot of questions asked yesterday morning about the phony briefing that Bush got in that hangar featuring a backdrop of Coast Guard helicopters. People are wondering why those choppers were not out picking up flood victims or delivering supplies. The reason is simple. Bush had the majority of helicopter traffic stopped while Air Force One was in the Gulf Coast region. 3 tons of food. This is from the Times-Picayune. 3 tons of food ready for delivery by air to refugees in St. Bernard Parish and on Algiers Point sat on the Crescent City Connection Bridge Friday afternoon as air traffic was halted because of President Bush's visit to New Orleans, officials said. See, he gets a little nervous when helicopters fly over. Must be his post-traumatic stress disorder from when he served in Vietnam. Oh, he didn't serve in Vietnam? Must be his post-traumatic stress disorder from when he was drunk at a frat party and passed out in the lawn and a helicopter going over woke him up. Casey O'Shea, the chief of staff for U.S. Congressman Charlie Melencon, the Democrat of Napoleonville from Louisiana. Casey O'Shea says on Friday, "We had arrangements to airlift food by helicopter to these folks, and now the food is sitting in trucks because they won't let helicopters fly. Why? Because George Bush didn't want any helicopters flying while he was flying into, flying out of, or all the time that he was on the ground in Louisiana. After all, you never know, a terrorist might be in one of those helicopters trying to take him out." And he's just very worried about that. You'll recall, after 9/11, he did not, you know, probably most Americans think that George got on a plane in Florida and flew right back to Washington, D.C. Sorry, it took him 24 hours to get back to Washington. First, he flew to Nebraska to hide out. He made several stops along the way. They were clueless. He was scared to death. He ran off with his tail between his legs. It took him an entire day to decide that he'd go back to Washington, D.C. And you know those two women who came out of nowhere to comfort George Bush? The pictures on TV of Bush with his arm around these two women. Well, they actually didn't even live in Biloxi, where the photo op was. Instead, they had come to town for the day to try to salvage clothes from the area for one of the women's sons. In other words, they were looters. But they were white looters, so they were salvaging. But they looked nice. They figured they'd look on TV, look good on TV, so they grabbed them and brought them over. And here's a transcript of the conversation between George Bush and one of these women. Bush says to her, he says, "There's a Salvation Army center that I'll tell you where it is, and they'll get you some help. I'm sorry, they'll help you." And she says, "I just came here looking for clothes." Bush says, "Well, they'll get you some clothes at the Salvation Army center." And this woman is trying to tell him, you know, "We just came here to loot the place." She says, "We don't have anything, Bush. I understand. Do you know where the center is? What I'm talking about?" Guy with shades. There's a guy standing there. He says, "There's no center there, sir. It's a truck." Bush says, "There's trucks?" Guy, "There's a school." This is the man with shades. "There's a school about 2 miles away." Bush, "But isn't there a Salvation Center down here?" Guy, "No, that got wiped out." Bush, "A temporary center?" Guy, "No, sir. They got a truck there for food." Bush, "That's what I'm saying, for food and water." He turns to the woman who's been standing there. He says, "You need food and water." Pretty amazing, eh? striking discrepancy, they note, Democracy Underground, between the CNN International report on the Bush visit to the disaster zone and the reports by German TV. CNN flying over this. Now, Mary Landrieu flew over the levees. And this is what she had to say. This is a senator. She says, touring this critical site yesterday with the president, I saw what I believe to be a real and significant effort to get a handle on the major cause of this catastrophe. Flying over the critical spot again this morning, less than 24 hours later, it became apparent that yesterday we witnessed a hastily staged set for a presidential photo opportunity, and the desperately needed resources we saw were this morning reduced to a single lonely piece of equipment. George W. Bush staging a photo op. And Mary Landrieu calling him on it. Did you hear that reported on the national news? Somehow I didn't think so. It's 10 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman here with you. And the place where smart people get their news.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And there are lies in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the camp. There is blood on the wall.
You tell him, Jackson Brown. And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-888-9884. Telephone number, and Neil in Casper, Wyoming on the line. Hey, Neil.
Hi, Tom. How you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was just thinking when you were talking about that stuff, that the photo ops that were going on. As I recall, I was watching the Bush arriving in Mobile the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Thursday.
Yeah, and he, by the way, at that time, he was making a big deal about telling the nation that the convention center had been secured. All they had done, as Geraldo Rivera actually reported on Fox, was they locked people in.
Yeah. Well, I noticed I was watching MSNBC on that, and they kept cutting inside the building after his plane landed at the airport there.
Inside which building?
Inside a hangar building at the airport. And there's two helicopters, and I'm thinking, there's people dying over there in New Orleans. Why aren't those helicopters in the air? A few minutes later, Bush is inside the building. First you see two helicopters with nobody around them. Then you see two helicopters with two crews of several men in uniform, like they were working on them.
Yeah, and, like we're getting ready to go out there and help. We just need the president to come here and tell us to go.
I know. And he's leaving these things on the ground, these crews who aren't doing anything. You can tell from what they were doing. They were just posing on this thing. And there he is, and as soon as he started to talk, they all stood at attention, and, all right, he gave his speech, I'm the great president. Yeah, right. You know what? I'm so disgusted. I am so, so disgusted.
Yeah, I have to share. I agree with you, Neil.
Thanks for letting me vent.
You're welcome, Neil. Thanks for the call. It's really a sad day in America. I mean, setting aside any issues of political gain or advantage or whatever you want to call it, it's really a sad day in America when the president, and it's been a sad day for 5 years now, when the president regularly lies to us. He lies about why we should go to war. He lies about what he was seeing on 9/11. He lies about what's going on in New Orleans. It's a sad day. It's a tragedy for our country that such a man would be president. It's embarrassing, but it's a tragedy. And people are dead because of this tragedy. People are dead in Iraq. American GIs are dead. Iraqis are dead. People are dead in New Orleans because of the incompetence of this crew. It's just a tragedy. And in order to do something about it, we need to convert our indignation, our upset, into political action right now. There's an election coming in 11 months, 12 months. Get out there. Get active. Immediately. Please. We got to save this country.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. George W. Bush, I just, one of the folks in the chat room, which you can get to, by the way, by going to tomhartman.com. One of the folks in the chat room just posted this, the newest poll on George W. Bush's response to Hurricane Katrina. 55% disapprove, 7% not sure, 38% approve. Who are those 38%? Fox News viewers? I don't know. I don't get it. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Scott in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
There you go. Well, good. I usually agree with you almost all the time on stuff, but I got a bone to pick with you.
Go for it.
I think you need to cut Tim Russert a little slack on his Meet the Press show over the weekend.
You're talking about the program yesterday, though?
Yeah.
You're right.
On Sunday. I mean, you know, the very first thing first question he asked Michael Chertoff was, shouldn't you resign? And shouldn't Mr. Brown resign? And shouldn't heads roll at FEMA and at Homeland Security for misconduct, you know, that they have displayed during this whole disaster? I mean, right out of the gate, he said, shouldn't you go, which I thought was great. It was really sad that, you know, had that man out from Jefferson Parish talking about that man's grandmother. I mean, by the time he was done, I was crying.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Tim tried to go back to him a couple times, and I think he was just spent. You know, I think that, you know, the grief and the wear and tear, and I think, you know, he couldn't have responded to anything else. He was,
you know,
just
Scott, you're
done.
You're absolutely right. And yesterday, I think I made a comment like, you know, Tim doesn't want the corporate media doesn't want too much criticism of Bush or something to that effect. And it was a cheap shot. You're right.
You know, and I don't doubt that at all. You know, I think you're absolutely right. You know, they are in damage control for sure. You know, I think that's correct. But, you know, I think he did a good job, and Aaron Brown on CNN has been doing a good job as well. I'm bringing up the issues, you know, is this race-related? You know, the other night, I think one of the state guys, not it wasn't a FEMA guy, but a state guy, just said, you know, we've just established, a joint communications task force between the state and federal. And Mr. Brown's like, okay, here we are a week and 2 days into it, and we just now have a joint communication center between state and federal.
Yeah, now, if only these guys had paid the same amount of attention to the lies that led up to the war in Iraq, to the Downing Street memo, to Karl Rove and the outing of Valerie, you know, it just goes on
and
on.
Oh, for sure,
and on.
For sure.
They have been living absolutely in fear and terror of the Bush administration. And I think finally, because the Bush administration holds the power to say, no, we will not talk with you anymore. And that's the power that they have used to terrify reporters. They slapped Helen Thomas with that. Bush's very first press conference, since Harry Truman, she sat in the first row and been asked the first question. And he asked her the first question, and she gave him a tough one. And he said, that's it. She's never going to sit in the front row, and I'm never going to ask her another question again. She gets bumped to the back row. The Associated Press says, what are we paying a reporter for being there who George won't talk to? And they fired her.
You're absolutely right. I sit there when the runaway bride was the big story all over the place, and it was on Aaron Brown's show. I sent him a scathing email. I'm like, dude, you know, I'm not going to watch your show if you're putting this stuff on. I mean, this is tabloid stuff. This is local news stuff. This is not what your show should be about. And I listed off all the issues that he should be talking about, most of which you just mentioned or whatever was current at the time, and said, you know, I'm not going to watch your show if this is what you're going to be about.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, I think, you know, with the Walmart people, you know, with the company, everything, and the money that they're contributing,
mm-hmm.
I think we should take a little different spin on that. I think instead of, you know, kind of beating them down a little bit for the amount as a percentage, you know, yeah, it's small and all that, I think we should be calling those people and saying thank you for your initial contribution and how we look forward to their continued support as different things come up, and basically guilt them into saying, you know what, I mean, you're right. I mean, $8 million to them is like $10 to me.
Well, no, but, actually, if your income is $89,100 a year, or if your net worth, if your the assets that you value your house and everything else is $89,100, then their donation to them would be the equivalent of about $7.34 to you.
I understand, but I think we should guilt them into it. You know, that their initial contribution was great and how much we look forward to their continued support of this cause and that cause. And
we're expecting
more out of them.
Yeah.
Thank you for what you gave us, but we're expecting more from you and not beat them up because they only gave $8 million. I mean, $8 million is only, you know, $8,900,000 more than I can give, and it's better than nothing. So, you know, I think we should try that tactic. You know, try to guilt them into giving us more.
Well, take a shot at it, Scott, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. I just don't think I mean, this morning on my local program, I had Grover Norquist on, and he was talking about how we need to eliminate the inheritance tax. And, of course, it's the Walton family that's funding most of this effort. It was a member of the Walton family that gave the initial $2 million that started the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. I mean, we're getting off topic. It's just a whole other area there. Scott Klinger, we'll get back to that one of these days. Scott Klinger is with us. He's the Corporate Accountability Coordinator for United for a Fair Economy. He's helped UFE's responsible wealth members file more than 60 shareholder proposals on executive pay over the last 7 years. Chartered financial analyst. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
In fact, speaking of wealth, war millionaires. Defense contractors' pay is up 200% since 9/11.
That's right. We published this report called Executive Excess Every Labor Day with the Institute for Policy Studies as our co-authors in Washington, D.C. And each year we look at both the overall trend in executive pay and how it compares to worker pay. And also we look at some specific trends. And one of the things we looked at this year was the pay of military contractors, both outright and compared to the pay of generals and privates in who are serving in Iraq. And we found that the average large company military contractor saw the CEO saw their pay tripled since the war started in 2001. And right now, a defense contractor CEO makes 160 times the pay of a CEO in the Army, a general. And I'm sorry, makes 23 times the pay of a general, 160 times the pay of a private, including their combat pay and their housing allowance.
Now, FDR during World War II said, and I quote, "I don't want to see a single war millionaire created in the United States as a result of this world disaster," end quote.
Absolutely.
Why are we
went out looking for abuses during his term, so we're just totally off the mark.
Yeah, how are they getting away with this? This is what blows my mind, Scott Klinger. You see these things. Halliburton, for example, just got a contract to help clean up Louisiana.
That's right.
I mean, it's like, what? It's the more you, and not only that, it was their KBR division, which they specifically reincorporated either in the Caymans or the Bahamas so that they wouldn't have to pay federal income tax on their profits.
Well, Halliburton's CEO got 171% pay raise just in the last year between 2003 and 2004 during that same period when government auditors were questioning $1.4 billion of charges in Iraq. So, malfeasance and questions and accounting problems are not even a reason for not giving large, huge pay increases.
Scott Klinger, any idea how much the value of Dick Cheney's Halliburton stock options has increased from the time he became president to today?
That's not something we looked at, so I don't have any information on that.
That would be a fascinating one. We know that when he became president, Halliburton was losing money, and that, you know, within a year of 9/11, Halliburton was making money, and that their profitability rested entirely on government contracts. But to the extent to which those stock options have increased in value, that would be a fascinating one. Scott is the Corporate Accountability Coordinator for the United for a Fair Economy. What's your website there, Scott?
It's www.faireconomy.org.
Okay, great. Faireconomy.org. And how has it happened that Americans, I guess I sort of asked you this just a minute ago, but I still don't get it, how Americans are just sitting back and letting this happen? Is it that the media is asleep at the switch, or that the media, like NBC, is actually owned by a war profiteer, General Electric? Is it that our media is so skewed that we just think that this is normal? Is it that our politicians aren't speaking out? Is it that the paradigm has shifted in our society? And if so, how and why?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. And the problem with the military contractors is not in a vacuum. We've seen the pay of the average CEO in general soar in the last year up to 431 times the pay of the average worker. That's up 45% in the last year. And there's a couple of reasons. One, if we think back 20 years or so, we had this sense that everybody was in it together. And in fact, when we look at CEO pay 20 years ago, the average boss made 42 times what the average worker made, about a tenth as big a ratio as exists today. And what we have seen since then is this sort of star culture that people believe that CEOs are the ones that make all the money and workers can lose their jobs in order to boost profits and boost CEO pay. And yes, we've come to accept that. But even when people have stepped in and objected, the pension funds, which is really the owners, the workers' savings account in this country, pension funds own a large amount of the stock market. Pension funds have stepped in and said, we think corporate boards are corrupt, that we need competitive elections. No corporation in America has a competitive election for their board. They put up as many directors as there are seats to be filled. And they're filled by mostly other CEOs and retired CEOs, so people who
it's an old boy club, an old boy network.
Yeah, it's a fox guard in a hen house. Yeah. And that's been allowed to persist. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which regulates corporations, 2 years ago put forth a pretty good proposal that would require companies to have competitive board elections. And they received the most letters of support from any proposal they had ever issued in the agency's history, close to 10,000 letters, and 90% of them were in favor of this proposal. And instead of moving that to swift action, you don't get much more of a majority than that in this country these days. And instead of moving to swift action, they were blocked by the Business Roundtable, which is the trade group of CEOs and other pro-business groups, and they've not been able to act on this, and probably won't be.
So, some of the companies that are out there that have been participating in malfeasance, shall we say, the pension underfunders, for example, those companies that have screwed the average workers with regard to their pensions. What's happening to the CEOs in those companies?
Well, it's not something we often hear about, but the companies in America owe their pension funds $353 billion at the end of last year, according to the government. And that's 27% more than the previous year. So we're seeing the pension underfunding really soar in this nation, and it's putting a lot of workers' pensions at risk. You'd think that those companies were all having financial trouble and they wouldn't be able to pay their executives very much, but in fact, the average CEO of the 20 largest pension underfunders received $20.4 million in compensation in 2004, which was 72% more than the average CEO. So if you boost your earnings by not paying your pension, you can get a payday for yourself at the end of the day, and that's happening far too often.
What about the book cookers, those CEOs whose companies are involved in shady accounting?
Well, we've been doing this report for a long time, and we look back at the last 10 years. We use the Business Week magazine's list of annual top 10 executives, highest paid executives each year. So over 10 years, if we look at the top 10, that's 100 slots. And 18 of those 100 slots had people who have who worked for companies that either have found to commit outright fraud or have been forced to make large restatements to their earnings because of aggressive accounting. And so we think there's a causal link between executives trying to get big pay packages and their aggressiveness and shadiness in their accounting packages.
And according to your report here, it appears that stock tankers, gross pay, and tax dodgers, all the same thing. This is a grim story. We got to wrap it up here,
okay,
Scott, but I appreciate your being with us. Scott Klinger, the Corporate Accountability Coordinator at United for a Fair Economy. Once again, the website, Scott?
Is www.faireconomy.org.
Faireconomy.org. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Keep up the great work. Keep telling the truth out there.
Okay.
I appreciate it. It's just absolutely marvelous with what you guys are doing. It's 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman on the program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Now you don't.
And That's why we're taking this country back.
Country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes.
Yeah, you say unite, but you divide us more. And welcome back, my friends. It is 25 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Police shot eight people carrying guns on a New Orleans bridge Sunday, killing five or six, a deputy chief said. A spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers said the victims were contractors on their way to repair a canal. Contractors on the way to repair a canal. This is what happens when you get faux news out there hysterically going on and on and on and on and on about there's black people with guns out there shooting at people. And so all of folks coming, particularly all the white folks coming in to help out, they all carry guns. And as soon as they see somebody moving with a gun, they shoot at them. It's, you know, it's probably not about race. I shouldn't put it in that frame, but that is certainly the frame that Fox News had been using, and it's certainly the frame that the Bush administration wants to promote. It's certainly the frame that is believed by people like Barbara Bush when she makes comments like,
and so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
They were underprivileged anyway, so just, you know, living in a tent in a stadium, this is working very well for them. They don't have to live in that terrible house with those rats. I mean, you know, you've got your a little stereotyping there. So, you know, Fox News trying to create the meme, spread the meme, that the real story down there was not a humanitarian disaster. Instead, it was black folks going wild. And so what happens? People start believing it. Well, those folks down there, they've gone wild. And what do? Police shot eight people carrying guns on a New Orleans bridge Sunday, killing five or six, a deputy chief said. A spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers said the victims were contractors on their way to repair a canal. Contractors were walking across a bridge on their way to launch barges into Lake Pontchartrain to fix the 17th Street Canal, said John Hall, a spokesman for the Corps. Earlier Sunday, New Orleans Police Deputy Police Chief W.J. Riley said police shot at eight people, killing five or six. The shootings took place on the Danziger Bridge, which spans a canal connecting Lake Pontchartrain to the Mississippi River. Wow. And thanks to the folks in our chat room for giving me a heads up on that. This is tragic beyond description, what's going on down there. Just absolutely tragic beyond description. Victoria Jones with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, I'm sorry. I forgot that you were on hold there.
That's okay.
My bad.
You're on a roll.
Yeah, we've got about a minute. What's up?
A couple of things. Senators Collins and Lieberman, Homeland Security Committee, Government Affairs, will start hearings tomorrow. I asked Senator Collins if they'd be prepared to question the president, and she laughed.
She laughed as in no, or she laughed as in yes?
She laughed as in kind of no, and basically she indicated, I need to get the exact text, she indicated that Homeland Security is where they're really looking here.
Yeah.
And at the press briefing today, it was a complete feeding frenzy. And Scott McClellan's phrase is playing the blame game. If I could count how many times he said it, I would have passed my math exam for getting that.
Yeah, right. Well, I can guarantee you, Frank Luntz has been focus grouping this thing like crazy. By the way, I got a call on my local show this morning, Victoria, from a boiler room in northern Virginia, calling to say we need to look at what the mayor was doing and the failures of the governor. You still there, Victoria?
That's a Republican talking point.
Yeah, hang on for just a second. I got to tell you about this. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
Your
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The polar caps are melting at a rapid pace. And rising ocean levels soon could harm the human race. But they have got no proof their theories are correct.
Oh, yeah.
Our corporations don't get enough respect. So come on, come on, come on, come on.
Slash it!
Slash another little piece of the forest.
Oh, just slash that for us.
Burn it!
Burn it!
Burn another little piece of Brazil. It feels so good.
Cut it!
Forest down, baby. No need to worry, cause there's plenty more water.
Yes, 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Nora in Eureka, California. Hey, Nora, what's up?
Hi there, Tom. I just came across this. It's pretty interesting. This is the U.S. Northern Command in Colorado. This is Lieutenant Commander Sean Kelly.
Yeah.
And he said that they had everything set up, 9 million meals and millions of liters of water and helicopters and everything. And they actually had the USS Bataan sailing almost behind the hurricane. It was, they followed it from Florida all the way over.
Let me actually read you the story here. Criticism of the federal government's response is also coming from some unlikely sources, including the Pentagon. Lieutenant Commander Sean Kelly, a Pentagon spokesman for Northern Command, revealed on the BBC that NORTHCOM was prepared to send in search and rescue helicopters from the USS Bataan almost immediately after the hurricane hit. He said, quote, "We had things ready. The only caveat is we have to wait until the president authorizes us to do so," end quote. That authorization didn't happen for days, even though the ship was docked just outside New Orleans. On board the ship were doctors, hospital beds, food, and the ability to make up to 100,000 gallons of water a day.
Exactly.
Right off the coast of New Orleans.
Exactly. It goes back to Bush.
And I'm getting calls on a local radio show that I do before I do this national show. I'm getting calls on a local show that is only heard in Portland, Oregon, and, you know, up and down the Pacific Northwest. You can hear it just about as far as Seattle. But anyhow, I'm getting calls on this show from a boiler room in Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. suburbs. Some Republican operation there saying, don't you think that we ought to be looking into the failures of the mayor? And where was the governor when it was important that she, you know, they're out there calling every radio talk show host today. They're probably working on a list of 500 or 600 of them all across the country to get their talking points out. These Republicans, Karl Rove has gone into full blown cover mode. And I predict that within 3 days, the conversation in America will have changed as a result of their efforts, because they are pumping piles of money and effort into this thing.
It's but disgusting.
It is. We shall see how it plays out.
It's
Nora.
Disgusting, and I think this is a wake-up call for all Americans. Be whatever, you know, political party you lean to. I'm talking about Americans. We have to realize we're all on our own, okay? We have to realize we're all on our own.
Well, wait a second here. Barbara Bush says that, you know, the underprivileged are, like, you know, a little different. Like, they do actually pretty well when they just sleep on cots in a stadium. Here's Barbara Bush yesterday.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
This is working very well for them.
Well, yeah, of course, because they are non-people.
There you go. That's the aristocratic view of what John Adams used to refer to as the rabble, which is all the rest of us.
Right? And what is it? 1% of America is elitist, and then there's the rest of us.
Yeah.
We're the non-people.
And that's the tragedy of this administration, that they are of, by, and for multinational corporations and inherited wealth, the CEO and investor class, what the Wall Street Journal refers to as the investor class. And then anybody who dares bring that up, of course, they jump all over them and say, oh, you're trying to engage in class warfare. It's like the French aristocracy. It's like Marie Antoinette before the French Revolution. They were terrified of class warfare. Class warfare ultimately bit them in the butt. And I have a feeling that, you know, that Warren Buffett was right when he said there is class warfare in America. My class, he's the second richest man in America. My class declared it, and we're winning it.
They are.
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. People are waking up, I think. I really do. I agree with you, Nora. Nora, thank you for the
call. I sure hope so. I hope this is a wake-up call to all us people.
Yeah, I do, too.
And we're the real Americans.
We're all real Americans. It's just that we shouldn't be letting the aristocrats, the plutocrats, and the kleptocrats run the country. It's, you know, enough of that already.
Well, I call them the internationalists because they have connections with the internationalists, IMF and the World Bank and all that. Sure. We don't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right, Nora, and thank you for pointing it out. And it's also, you know, as a multinational corporation, you can change your nationality in 1 hour. Try emigrating to Canada or Norway or England as a human being. I mean, you can set up shop in any of those countries, bang, just like that. And then corporations say that they want to have personhood rights as well. Alan, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Alan, how are you doing today?
Hi, Tom. I had a question that friends of mine, we always sit around talking about politics and everything else, and always asking a question. Back in the 70s when there was a gas shortage problem, like truckers all banded together, people really seemed to get together for a fight, a cause more. What's your opinion as to why it seems like America, especially the younger Americans, I'm thinking like the late 20 and 30-year-olds, seem to have pretty much lay down and just accepted things the way they are and really don't try to buck the system at all. Are they just so used to it that they don't know how to buck it, or they just figure that's the way it is and I can't change it? What has really beaten down Americans? And I'm going to get off the air and let you listen to your answer. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alan. There's several things that come to mind. One is the old Roman notion of bread and circus, that if you simply feed them and entertain them, that they'll be just fine. And this last 30 years has seen the rise from, you know, we used to have three networks in a big city to, you know, 300 channels and video games and the internet. And there's just, you can entertain yourself to death now, and you couldn't before, number one. Number two, we've had Ronald Reagan, the rise of Reaganomics, the rise of, you know, Reagan coming in and saying the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Reagan essentially attacking his own job, saying that being a president, he said, you know, there are no good people in government. If they were, if they were any good, they would have been hired by a company. Reagan telling us that government is bad, government does no good, public service is not a noble profession. And, you know, you're on your own. Turn to the corporations if you need anything. And that's part of it as well, I think. And of course, in the 70s, I mean, speaking as somebody who was coming of age in the 70s, you know, I was in my 20s in the 70s, that was a time when we got it, that our government was trying to kill us. I mean, 58,000 Americans died in the Vietnam War, that LBJ and Nixon, they were just shipping kids off as fast as they could, that our government was trying to kill us for no good reason. And, you know, that's a bit of a wake-up call. No pun intended with the music there. It's a bit of a wake-up call when you see your friends coming home in body bags. And I think that that's beginning to happen now with the Iraq War, and I think that we just got a big shock with New Orleans, and people are realizing that this administration is just as badly disconnected as the Nixon administration was, that they're all about power, that they're all about supporting the needs of the wealthy, and that they're not about serving the people. And hopefully there'll be a change, and somebody like Jack Kennedy or somebody like Franklin Roosevelt, even better, will emerge and become the next president of the United States, and the Democratic Party will regain its sense and throw out those bums from the Democratic Leadership Council and say, enough, we're going back to our progressive roots. And that labor will have a renewal, and that we'll have, and the Democrats will take back the House and Senate. And if you want to see that, if you want to help make that happen, start getting active right now, because there's an election coming in about a year. And we need to start working on it today. I mean, there's primaries in many cases coming in a few months. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Well, first of all, who didn't know Halliburton was going to get the contracts down in Louisiana? But it's interesting to know where Mr. Cheney is now, because I haven't heard from him.
He's been in Wyoming on vacation.
Well, maybe they'll send a refugee camp up there. If that's what they want to call.
Well,
you know what?
That's
another thing, calling them people refugees who pay their taxes to this government all the time. The thing I wanted to tell you about, Tom, was just the other day, our great Senator Rick Santorum come out on a local TV station and said it is the people's own fault in Louisiana. They had every opportunity to vacate there. Here's a man to spend now almost 9 months selling a book in our state.
That's a man who had Pennsylvania
family values,
right?
Yeah.
And he had Pennsylvania pay to educate his children when they were educated elsewhere.
While he was selling insurance policies for the rest of the state to buy to educate their kids,
right? Yeah,
and also sell insurance policies or invest in the private funds for Social Security. This is what we have. This is why this man should be on a pedestal somewhere, Mount Rushmore, to show the sleaziest type of politician that walked the face of the earth.
Oh, yeah. Rick Santorum is right up there with the top five sleazy politicians in America. And for him to say that the folks in New Orleans, if he in fact said that, that they deserved their fate or that they could have fixed it. Now, number
their
one.
Their own fault is the way he
yeah,
put it.
Their own fault. I guarantee you, number one, that Frank Luntz has focus grouped that and that this is probably going to be the new Republican talking point. And I'll have it in email tomorrow morning from the RNC.
Hey.
And you're going to hear it all over right-wing talk radio. And number two, what it betrays is a shocking ignorance about American history and American geography. Because the reality is that New Orleans is there because it's the port city, because the wealth of America, all of our agricultural output goes down the Mississippi, not all of it, most of it, much of it, goes down the Mississippi River and out for export all over the world. Much of our oil and our natural resources, our raw materials, come in through New Orleans. Many of our finished goods now come in through that port. And that New Orleans has provided a pool of labor for that port, which just doesn't just serve Louisiana or New Orleans. It serves the entire United States. And they have never been powerful enough or big enough or strong enough to be able to protect themselves entirely from the weather. And that's why the governor and the mayor for years have been saying, hey, help us fix this thing.
Tom, one other thing, aren't it? The oil?
Yeah.
BP buys probably 65% of their oil from the United States, Alaska and the U.S. main body.
Of the oil that they sell in the United States.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're the biggest buyer of it.
Yeah.
So here they're buying their $23 barrel oil, and yet in Georgia they're gouging the people for $5.87. And this is our Mr. Tony Blair telling his people, not the gods, the people in the United States.
Well, the reality is the BP, while it's a British corporation, is not a government organization.
Well, okay, still. Okay, where's the president on the executive order? Say, you're not going to gouge.
Yeah.
Stop it immediately.
Well, see, that's what happened. I mean, somebody called a little earlier, and I meant to mention this and went off on some other tangent. That Nixon, at least to deal with the energy crisis, I mean, he tried to deal with it. He put on price controls and
right.
We have all kind of days, you know. And, I mean, they tried lots of different things. And this administration is so wed to the idea that the solution to everything is the free market, that they're doing nothing. Jim, thanks for the call and
thank
for raising these issues. It's good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Joe in Salinas, California. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, hi. So many things. The other day, I think it was Thursday evening or Friday, we missed you guys all weekend with the holiday and all that. So
I was live on the air yesterday.
Well, I couldn't get you, but anyway, your screener can tell you more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, two things I thought were important. I'm still astounded about the bridge workers being one thing that could.
Oh, let me correct that. Thank you for bringing that up, Joe. There is another story out. This is from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer that spins the story quite differently. It says police shot and killed at least five people Sunday after gunmen opened fire on a group of contractors traveling across a bridge on their way to make repairs. Now, this story essentially says that the people that they shot were people who were trying to rob the contractors.
I see.
And that the contractors are fine. So I've got two dueling news stories here from two different news organizations, one saying some contractors were shot, the other saying some bad guys trying to hurt the contractors were shot. I can't tell you which is true. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Fox probably correct. If the contractors did die, they'll just drop them in the water there. Anyway, the important thing that I haven't heard any play on any air waves is about the Red Cross not being evident a man who was looking into all the funds that they had put away for so-called national disasters after 9/11, the half billion plus that they put socked away. He was saying, why don't you use some of that? And they said that they were given a stand-down order by FEMA. And,
it's on their website. It's on their website, rescuecrest.org.
Anyway, what I thought was significant there was also when he contacted the FEMA website, he noticed that the Salvation Army had been supplanted by our friendly Pat Robertson.
Yes, Operation Blessing. They took that down yesterday. But up until yesterday, Operation Blessing was Red Cross was there, as was a food bank. But
the person that he contacted actually said they were given stand down orders from Homeland Security and FEMA, which is obviously dereliction of duty any number.
Yeah, no, they were actually given those orders, Joe. It's on their website. They've got a news release about it. They were told to stand down.
Thursday they're going to try to absolve themselves of all blame. It should be interesting if they get that far.
And somebody will try to scrub it.
Yeah, you got that.
It's pretty bizarre. Thanks a lot, Joe.
It's unconscionable.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Oh, my goodness. But, you know, they were underprivileged to begin with, right?
So many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
It's just working very well for them. It's, you know, just having a cot and all your possessions under you. No problem. Working just fine. Texas is a beautiful place to be. Beautiful place to be. Here in the middle of the real free speech zone, the Tom Hartman radio program, no Republican National Committee ID required. No barbed wire. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, but you're going to have to serve somebody. Welcome back, my friends. Our program brought to you by Eco Wine, organic wine. Yeah, did you know grapes have more pesticides than any other agricultural product? Not a good idea to drink wine that's not organic. Eco Wine, 1-888-ECO-WINE, ECOWINE, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Roy in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. While I'm thinking about it, Eco Wine's Cabernet, I don't remember their label, is terrific.
Chateau Veronique, yeah. They got marvelous wine.
A couple hours ago, I was listening to local hate radio, and they were blaming the victims. These people, their welfare, and they Medicare, and this and that, and they finally found out their government just doesn't work. And while they were doing that, I know that they got one of those phone bank call-ins, because the first question was, what was the mayor doing down there?
That's verbatim what this guy said to me.
And I could not get it. I ran out of time, and I wasn't going to listen to him anymore, but I couldn't get into
telling you, they're running the phone bank, Roy. They're absolutely running the phone bank.
Now, when Trump says that he wants to get to the bottom of this, is that going to be like the investigation into the CIA?
Right, yeah, and the CIA, yeah, the leak. Yeah.
Will we get that kind of results 2 years from now?
Well, we don't have any results yet. I mean, it's still...
That's 2 years out.
We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
I don't have any idea who's in charge of taking care of disaster relief. Roy, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along.
These local guys have got to get nailed.
Yeah, well, and, you know, probably they're not even going to know. They're not even going to know. Gary in Illinois. Hey, Gary, we've got just a few seconds left. What's up?
Last night I was listening to Alan Combs on Sirius Left, and a lady called in about his good times he had in New Orleans. She said she was calling in because she remembered those good times. She was a lap dancer, and Bush, I was a little skeptical, as Alan was. I could detect by his comments.
Oh, but she said Bush had been there?
Yep. And he was questioning her about it. She says, I've got pictures. I'll send you the pictures of it.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
And this was about, this was, I don't remember, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
He was still American.
Well, maybe that's why George was making that joke when he was there. He was saying, you know, I had good times here, maybe a little too good times. Amazing. Amazing. Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. You're remarkable. Well, this is Tom Hartman. It's the real radio support group of, by, and for we the people. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to David Poole for engineering our program, Louise for producing it, to our affiliates for carrying it, for the folks in the chat room for showing up. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Take good care.
You have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway.